can't go out there dressed up, feeling comfortable in something that we decided to wear, and walk with the same confidence, the same sense of security in what we have decided for ourselves that an Indian, a Pakistani, or somebody else. How come we can't walk with the same dignity that that Indian woman walks with or somebody else walks with? Though it be different, though it be out of style, how come we can't walk with the same assurance, with the same sense of security? Because we don't have a mind of our own. The Asian can come here, establish himself in America, put up his sign, put up his identity, and he lives in America as though he owns it. And you around here crying about welfare cut off, about this cut off. That's pitiful. That's pitiful. We're making a little progress, though. I remember the time when you say assalamu alaikum to the average Muslim in the public where other non-Muslims were here, and they would pretend that they didn't hear you, or if they heard you, they might just say, or if they were close enough, they said, or they might say, walaikum salam. Hey, what's happening, man? That's to tell the one that heard it, I'm like you. I said this, but don't think I'm like him now. I'm like you. Walaikum salam, brother. What's happening, man? What's happening, baby? What's happening now, man? Where you going, bro? That's to tell the non-Muslim that though I gave his greetings, I'm like you. 2 weeks to stand up in the image you've chosen for yourself. When you choose a form for yourself with your own intelligence, stand up in it and command the President of the United States to communicate with you through that form. That's right. I don't care who it is. Say, assalamu alaikum to your brother in front of the President of the United States. And don't apologize to the President for saying it. Don't say, assalamu alaikum, brother. And then say, you know, we live in the best country in the world. America is the best country. The brother, the imam was really wonderful when he put the American flag on our newspaper. Because this is the best country in the world. Don't talk to the President like that after you said assalamu alaikum to your brother. President, know that you're saying I love my situation with the flag better than I love my situation with this Muslim brother. Brother Imam, are you saying we should love our situation with a Muslim brother better than we love our situation with the country? Yes! That's American. Why? Because my situation with a Muslim brother, that has been ordered and established by Allah, who is Lord, God, King, boss over all the world. And the President is just President over the United States. Oh, you're not ready for that. He's telling us that this religion is more important than the United States of America. Did I have to tell you that? Good God Almighty. Sure, the United States will come and go. This religion will stay. Many nations have come and gone. This religion is still here. We don't know if the United States is going to last forever. Did anybody tell us in a Quran or Bible somewhere that the United States will forever exist? We don't know. The majority of the people of America might decide to change this government. The provision is already there. If the majority become dissatisfied, they can alter or either change and bring in a new form of government. The provision is there. So the language of the Constitution itself tells me that nobody thought that this was forever. But my religion is forever. My Muslim way of life is forever. Now, why does a conscientious objector go to jail? Because he believes that he's following the dictates of God, of conscience that he considered to be divine, higher than man's judgment or man's order. Is that right? And he will go to jail. He refused to obey his conscience, and he will go to jail. But the white man has worked on us for so many generations, 200 years of slavery and then so-called freedom, he worked on us for so many generations until we ain't capable of thinking bigger than the white man. We can't think equal with the white man. We can't think bigger than the structure or the form that the white man has set or established for people to live in. If we think bigger than that, we start shaking. Just like the Negro who was on the plantation and was afraid to think freedom, because freedom meant going outside of the plantation. So he shivers when somebody talks to him about freedom. Don't you know that? Don't you know many of your ancestors, when people started preaching freedom to them, they shook, they shivered, they became so afraid, shaking in mortal fear. Many had to be forced up north at the point of a gun. People had to put a pistol on, with live rounds in it, and have the hand thing on the trigger. Say, look, you leaving this plantation or you're going to die here. That's how they had to get some of our people out of the plantation or up from the plantation into freedom. Don't you know that same kind of mentality is existing today right here? Some of us, if we ask our people to think in bigger spheres of human freedom, we can't do it. Oh, I don't have no right to think outside of the limits of America. Yes, you do. And if you can't think outside of the limits of America, you can't really qualify for leadership in America. How are you going to lead a country and you can't think beyond its border? You got to be able to judge your own country. You got to be able to criticize your own country. You got to be able to take your nation and put it into a balance and weigh it and tell the world how much it's worth. Then you're ready to be the leader of that nation. But if you think your nation is so big, you can't judge it, you can't weigh its value, you can't alter it, you can't make its suggestions for its improvement, you ain't qualified to lead that nation. Because you are smaller than that nation. How can something smaller than something rule or lead it? No, you can't rule or lead something that you're smaller than. You got to grow bigger than the thing you want to rule. And you think this nation ain't ruled? This nation is ruled. Every nation is ruled. And the people that rule it, the majority of intelligent people, hope that their mind have expanded and become bigger than the history of that nation. In order for them to lead that nation further in the future, their vision has to become bigger than the total history of that nation. They have to be able to conceive the past, the present, and then project themselves into the future and bring a bigger dimension for that nation. And ain't no slave-minded people gonna be able to do that. Ain't no cowards gonna be able to do that. You're gonna have to be brave. You're gonna have to be bigger than a white man, bigger than America. That's right. And we are gonna make it. Because some of us are alive. Some of us are free. Some of us are Muslims indeed. And we got a lot of patients with the funny farm. The mental hospital and the play yard. We got a lot of patients with it. But we are getting impatient. And Allah is my witness. I'm going to ask the leadership of this community to start collecting the brave start collecting first the sincere and then the brave. And we want to get that few together, and we're going to build something great if it's just for a few. Right. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Thank you. That's the only way. That's right. We're sick and tired. We're sick and tired. We're not going to keep wasting our lives around here. Well, I'm almost 50 years old. And the Lord knows my soul wanted to see dignity come, not to me as an individual, but to my people. And I'm sure most of us that step in these jobs of responsibility, that man ain't making no money. That man ain't making no money. Ain't nobody giving him no money. You think we're rich? The average one of our imams, we represent the poorest people out there. The average preacher, he got what we don't have. The average preacher pays his bill. He got a nice car. He knows he's going to have money. The average preacher reaching his pocket, and he's not ashamed to invite his fellow preacher in. Some of these imams, they're ashamed to invite me here. Because he knows if I ask him to pay the hotel bill, he ain't got the money. He can't even take me to dinner. So look, you might say, well, what are they staying here for? They must be devoted to human interest. If they weren't, they wouldn't be still here. Now, we ain't saying they're saints. None of us are saints. None of us are saints. But they must have something special about them. They could be out there knocking somebody in the head. Rashid got a lot of muscles, man. You can... Well, you can hit it big every night. Knock you a fat purse dude in the head every night. You don't have to suffer like you suffer and go to jail and live good. But he chose to live with dignity. The man chose to live with dignity. Now, you think I don't love a man like that? I love a man like that. Especially in this day and time. Men like that are so precious. That's right. Oh, but Brother Imam, if you knew what I knew about him, maybe I know more than you know about him. And I still love him. Right? So I take special people to work with human beings in our situation and suffer what we have to suffer. Take special people. Wearing day and night about how he can bring results in the community that will benefit the whole community. That's right. And all of us, same thing. All of us, none of us different. I've met all of you, man. They all alike. Very seldom you find one different from the picture I'm giving you right now of the man. Most of us, we don't have money. You might say, you got money, buddy, man. No, I don't. If you would suddenly give me $5,000 right now, I would be broke. Because I would take that $5,000 and put it where it's needed. And I would be broke right away. So don't think I got money. I ain't got no money. None of us got any money. My debt is more than the money I got. Yes. If I pay my bills, I'd be still in debt. All right? Well, Brother Ma'am, don't you want us to give you some money? No. I want you to make this community strong that you're in. I don't want you to give me no money. If I get that desperate, I'll let you know. I won't go and rob nobody. You can count on that. I won't break the law. I get that desperate, I'll let you know. But I ain't that desperate. You got something to give me? Give it to this masjid. You belong to this masjid? Give it to this masjid. That's right. We're going to have to get out of our situation. Right now is a good time. It's a bad time. It's hurting us economically, financially. It's hurting us. Hurting our families. Programs being cut off, terminated, cut back. Hurting chances for many of our children who had a chance to go to school, get a decent education. Now some of them ain't going to get it. The cost of these cut-offs, cutbacks,
determination. So it's a bad time. But in a sense, it's a good time. Why? Because it tests our survival strength. And we need our survival strength to be tested, challenged. It challenges our survival strength. Making it too easy for us have made us sissy people. People that rather have somebody else do it for us. There is dignity in doing something for self. A sense of strength, a sense of victory. Well, I feel that I have a victory when I do something with my own arm, my own hand, my own energy, and bring myself up to a better situation. I feel a victory. If somebody do it for me, I feel good, but I don't feel a victory. We need strong people. And to be strong, you're going to have to accept to suffer. To do things the hard way. Dear brothers and sisters, if the imam or the treasurer or anybody that has been given an office in this community, if they come up here or call a meeting and ask for volunteers to clean the masjid, to repair something, to paint, if they ask you to go to somebody's house and paint it, if you ask any question, it should be, is this person that you're asking, the house you're asking, is it a decent person? Are they worthy of this? You shouldn't even ask if they're Muslim. But if you have to, then the farthest you should go and say, is this a Muslim? But even if you say it in a Muslim, you still have another question. Is it a morally upright Muslim? Is it a decent Muslim? Is it a Muslim that's contributing something to the community? So why not ask that question first? Is it a decent person? Is it a person that's contributing something? Is it a person that's worth something to the society? If they say yes, really you shouldn't even ask another question. Because your leaders have asked you to do that. Really, you shouldn't ask any question. If you ask a question, that means you don't trust the judgment of your leader. They say, look, we want you to go to such and such address on such and such street. We want to wash the walls and we want to do some painting over there and fix up the house. You shouldn't say, how much are we going to get paid? If the man said, look, we got a job. Somebody wants us to fix up their house. We need some volunteers. They're going to pay us. It's a paying job. Good. Then we shouldn't rush up. We should say, well, just a minute, brother, ma'am. Let us see who have the greatest need in this community. And let us give these jobs to those who are able to do the jobs, but have also the greatest need, the greater need. More children to feed. More demands on them. Let's send them to the job. All right? And, but look, brothers, you should be prepared, and sisters too. You should be prepared to jump up and say, I can. You're out of work? You're not working? So you don't have any job? You're unemployed? You ain't doing nothing anyway but laying around in the house, suffering, depressed, watching TV till that become monotonous, turning that off, doing something else. You're just looking for something to do. Bored to death? You ain't punching no clock. You don't have any job. Don't you know it's a favor to you that somebody has something for you to do? Whether you get money for it or not? That's the sense, that's the psychology, the good sense that the average person can't see. Look, I'm staying at home, I'm going to nothing. I have a book right now. One of the latest books in behavioral science. It was given to me by a brother on the West Coast after I made a lecture. They got a book and they gave me something supporting what I brought, the points I brought out in the lecture. The book is an excellent book. Now, this is not what I brought out in the lecture, but in this book it says that human life deteriorates when it's not involved, when it's not active. Now, this ain't us speaking. This is the latest in this field of science, by doctors of science. Human life deteriorates when it's not involved and not active. And they say the life is tied together. The sensory life, the motor life, mean your muscles, and the intellect, your perception, visual and also intellectual perception. All of these things are tied together. And if you're not using those, the whole life is going to deteriorate. So what they're saying is that they're all together, they all operate together. It's better to have a man physically active than to not have him active at all. Even if he's physically active, his physical activity is going to require a certain amount of motor skill and the skill of perception and intellect. But if they can put you out of business completely, no job, no nothing, and you just sit around and vegetate, they finish with you. That's the best program for genocide ever thought of. Don't shoot them with a gun. Just let them stay at rest doing nothing. Give them the life of the baby in the crib. Let them toddle around the house and doo-doo and pee-pee. Eat and cry and have sex and laugh and have fun. You infanticize them. You make them infants. And have a whole race now have been emasculated, have been given to a process of genocide without even raising a hand to strike them physically. Did nothing but made them idle and left them to childlike. That's right. Well, that's what this world does. So you ain't got nothing to do. You unemployed. If we would ask the hands to raise now that are not working and not employed, you'd be surprised how many hands would jump up. They ain't got no job. Now, if you understand this scientific fact of your human needs, then you should be asking the imam every day. He shouldn't have to ask you. You should come to him or anybody he designates. You should come every day. Say, Brother Imam, I'm not going to look for a job, and I don't have a job. Brother Imam, don't you have something for me to do? Don't ask him how much he going to pay you. The job will pay you. You will be using your muscles. You will be using your physical body. You'll have to use your visual ability. You'll have to use your intellect. It will keep your total life functioning while you're waiting to get something that will pay you money. And in fact, if you understand this, this is paying you money. Because after all, your small self is the personal self. Your big self is your community self. When you come into this place here, this is yours. This is more yours than your apartment. All right? So if you do something to improve the value of this piece of property, you have been paid. You did make money because it went to improve the dollar value of your property. That was money that went into your pocket. That's the way we have to think. That's the way the Mexicans think. That's the way the Hispanics think. That's the way the Asians think. They come here and they live together in a few rooms. Nine of them live in two rooms. Sometimes they have wives. They may have two or three wives living on one floor. No partition separating them. But they ain't gonna violate each other's privacy. They'll hang a curtain up. They'll make a curtain partition to separate one family from another. And if one family will live in that room or in the same room, they'll take a curtain partition and separate one room. And on that side of the curtain will be that man and his wife and his children. On the other side of the curtain will be the other family. And they'll live in that place together until they can get enough money from saving to do better. Sure. The situation calls for that. In fact, I'm thinking like the Dickens. And I say, boy, the next mess that we build under mine, and where I am, I'm going to build it so it can house a lot of people. We don't need no mess yet. I'm going to build a rooming house. And it's going to have a big wide area for prayer, for Jumu'ah. But it's going to have provision for school, for masjid, work program, and living. That's right. And ain't no lazy sucker going to sleep there. Right? And then let America point a finger at us. Let them say, those people they're disgracing America. They just pile up into one place and let them bring us on the television. And let us defend our case. Right? You don't like this situation? These people are paying their bills. These people are improving their lives. These people are helping the society. What about all those you got locked up in all these projects, giving them welfare and having them, sending them into crime because they ain't welfare cut off and et cetera? So what about that? You like that condition? What about all of our people you got in jail on the taxpayer? You like that condition better than this? You goddamn shitty fake society? Go to hell. That's right. And I'll say that on television. You know they'll cut it off. But I'll say you goddamn shitty, fake, phony society, go to hell. Yeah. Look, if they can shame us out of our good sense program, why, we're finished. We work hard to think our way up out of an inferior state, and then we let somebody say, oh, but look, that's bungling up. I'm ready to ride a horse down the street. If I can save some money, and I want to embarrass this country. I want to embarrass the world. It ain't only this country. Russia pulling the same kind of game on this subject. Yeah, I'm ready to embarrass them. I'm ready to ride a horse down the street. And hey, how come you're riding a horse? Because your civilization won't allow me to do better. That's right. I can't afford your car. Can't afford your gas. It might catch me riding down the street on a big dog. I'm telling you, you all think I'm making jokes. I'm not making jokes. That's right. When winter comes, tell them, say, look, the city, it's not practical for you to take the snow off our street. Leave that snow on our street. We can't afford cars. So leave the snow. We got us some big, big dogs, and we made us some nice sleds. And these dogs are going to take us to our job downtown. That's right, and go down the street on the dog, the sled. Say, this is what the country has come to. Say, hey, why are you doing? Say, this is what the country has come to. Say, this is my sled. These are my dogs. I don't owe nobody nothing for them. Can't nobody come and repossess this. Aren't you tired of being owned by the finances? I'm tired of being owned by them. I don't want them owning me. Brothers and sisters, some of us can do this. That's right. Some of us can lead a demonstration that will embarrass the civilized world. That's right. They don't hear nothing but that. Right now, they got us in court. I'm going to let you go in a few minutes. No, we're going. It's hot, and I know he's getting hungry. He's ready for that chicken again. The best chicken I ate last night. I don't think I ever ate a chicken, piece of chicken better than that chicken they served last night. Beautiful dinner and beautiful affair. Yes, they got us in court, and they're using the family against the community against the family, and actually they are succeeding because neither side have the courage to do what's best for ourselves. Both sides are weak. Now, when I say our community is weak, I mean weak in this respect. The community likes to be loved and accepted too by everybody. We don't want nobody frowning at us or saying, "Oh, you disappointed us. We didn't think you all would do nothing like that." If the situation calls for us to do something that makes them feel uncomfortable, make them feel uncomfortable. And the family, they're weak for money. And I understand many of the members of the family, I'm talking about my family now, my own family, blood relatives, they're desperate. Most of them weren't qualified for jobs, and you know how hard jobs are to find now. Most of them too old to work, they're retired age. No employment records, no Social Security buildup, worked for the nation all those years, in bad situation. But in a sense, they're not in as bad situation as they claim to be in, as they pretend to be in, because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did give them certain properties that they haven't utilized, that they won't get the good benefit from, because they want to hold it and want to wait and see how much they're going to get from the court before they make any investment in this or before they sell this. Thinking that, well, maybe I'll get more from the court and then I'll be able to take that money from the court and I'll be able to invest in the house and bring the value of the house up and sell it and get even more. You know, it's like the hungry person got something now, but won't use it, holding it. Ever seen an animal get something to eat and they'll hold that piece of food under his foot and reach out and try to get another, and he get another when he take his other foot, try to hold it. You see a third one? He hold it two under the foot. And after a while, two dogs done grab those under his foot. And another one snatched that out of his mouth. Now he's standing there with just a little thing to feed in his mouth, and he wondering what happened. He was too greedy, too desperate, too greedy. Well, human beings are like that sometimes when they get in a terrible, frustrating situation, very desperate material situation, you see. They get like that. So they got money here, but they holding this under this arm, and they reach that more with this arm, then they get this under here, and they pull that in, rake that in with a foot. Trying to rake in all they can get, and after a while they drop some because they're trying to hold too much. They drop some, somebody else pick it up and gone. We're in court, and the state of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is being eaten up by neglect, being eaten up by taxes, being eaten up by court fees. And the state, they are waiting to get estate tax, IRS waiting like a hungry dog with his tongue out, hoping that it'll be established in the court that a lot of property belongs to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad so that it can come in and charge the Honorable Elijah Muhammad with not paying taxes on personal income. So IRS is waiting with that tongue out, the state waiting to get the state there, and the lawyers are eating it up, neglect on the properties, just deteriorating, bringing down the value. So they are losing and we are losing because they have been successful and feeding the weak greed tendencies in these people to get them to overlook the community interest for their own narrow interest. And in doing so, they're going to lose everything from self and the community to what we call the system. The system is going to get it all. Okay. Now, dear beloved people, look at this. I didn't bring it with me, but I wish I had. They published in, I'm not sure which paper it was. I'm not sure it was the New York Times. It might have been the New York Times. Hoover, president of the Hoover of the FBI. Is that the one with the New York Times? Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI. They published his plan for containing or completely destroying the Nation of Islam. And his plan says a number of things. Find a way to manipulate the present leaders or either get rid of them by charging them by something, get rid of them or manipulate them. And bring in new leadership or either find among them a leader that is the kind of person we would like to see over the Nation of Islam. All right? They say the leader, they want a leader to do this, they have to be sure that there won't be no desire for separate states. And a few other things. I can't list all the things that they said. But what they describe as what they want almost fit me perfectly. The kind of leader that they wanted almost fit me perfectly. One that wouldn't ask for separate states, one that wouldn't be antagonistic, one that would accept more of the American life, the American way. Okay? That's the kind of leader they want. Fit me almost to a T. Now, they also said that the Nation of Islam has to be, I don't know if you use the word to contain, but that's what it meant. Contain means get it so it cannot go any further than you want it to go. That's containing it. Okay. Or destroy. And Hoover suggested that the way to get it was through the probate court. And when Elijah dies, this can be achieved through the probate court. Everything that they said there, you can see it working. If they have supported me, it has been in the Hoover plan. All right? I'm talking about these devils that have no interest but selfish interest. They're not moral. They're not thinking human. They're thinking selfish. All right? So if they have accepted me, it's because it has fitted in the Hoover plan. He's the kind of leader that we want. All right? The next part of it is the material part. How will we get the material wealth for the community? We will get it through the probate court when Elijah dies. How will this be done? We have to create the vision. If any of you read this, you remember. Say, we have to create leaders to divide the community up. So if Farrakhan is not disliked by the establishment, it's because Farrakhan fits the Hoover plan. If Silas is tolerated, ain't nobody bothering him. Nobody bothering Silas. Nobody bothering Farrakhan. No, and they know he's exploiting the poor people. Nobody bothers him. But I got people over here watching me like a hawk. from the intelligence department, watching me like a hawk, watching every penny, where it goes, how they're using it, watching us like a hawk. But ain't nobody watching Farrakhan, ain't nobody watching Silas, ain't nobody watching my Uncle John Muhammad and the others I can name. Nobody watching them because they fit into the Hoover plan. And as long as they are doing injurious things to their people, the Hoover plan is satisfied. Imam Wahdatine Muhammad, he's not injuring his people. He's trying to build strength on his people. So we have to watch him. We don't want him to prosper materially. Why, we'll threaten Saudi Arabia if they offer him any assistance. If they want to give him something, it better be small. They better not give this independent nigga too much. Or we'll threaten Saudi Arabia. You think I'm not joking? This is our situation. Some of you will be intimidated by this situation. It doesn't intimidate me. It makes me all the much more defiant. That's right. Not intimidated about it. They're not going to change me. Not as long as I try to please Allah and Allah is with me. They can't change me. They wanted a good, holy leader who just wanted to establish 5 daily prayers and make a spiritual community out of his nation of Islam. That's what they wanted from me. And they put people around me to see that my leadership was contained in that narrow concept, that I'd be able to do no more than just spiritualize the community. You think just today I'm preaching economics. You think just today I'm preaching political dignity. I've been doing that ever since I became an imam. In fact, I did that before I became an imam. When I was out on my own, I got papers to prove that I designed programs for social dignity, for material dignity, for political dignity, before even I came into this community. They knew my ambitions went further than just praying on a rug. But I had I was the ideal person, being the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, being the one that they kind of mystified, WD. You know, so being that special kind of child, they couldn't pass by me. No, this is the ideal one. And he's nice. He's not violent. He's reasonable. He's really a religious person. He sincerely believes in God. We know it. We've seen that nigga praying. We've heard that nigga praying. We had that nigga's house wired up. We know that even when he gets mad, he still thinks about God. They curse his wife out and then go make a prayer. Excuse me, wife. But I'm human too. Sometimes I don't have a right to curse out, you know, but I get frustrated too sometimes. And I say, Shirley, get the hell out of my face, will you? And she say, well, you can get the hell out of mine too. And I go make my prayer, and the next thing, you wouldn't believe it. We be in such hot romance, baby. So I don't mind a little human side to my life. It's all right for me, I guess. Yeah, so they know what goes on. They know what's got on all of my life. So they picked me, they supported me, they wanted me to be the leader. But they thought by now, most of you all would have left me. Yeah. Yeah. They thought if they can give this image of me out in the public, that I'm against the economic program. I'm against the FOI. I have dismantled the FOI. I have changed the whole nation of Islam. I don't want money no more. This is a holy man. He hates money. All he wants to do is pray. They thought by now I wouldn't have no followers but my family. And, well, not even that. They thought I'd be on a desert somewhere by myself. They thought Shirley would have left me by now. But it didn't turn out that way. Now, they find now that not only my community likes me, but now a whole lot of their people like me too. And so all we can do now is just pretend that this nigga doesn't exist. We got to pretend that he's out of business. That the thing has split up into different groups and they have lost all their wealth and their organization. They don't have that discipline in the organization no more. That it has just gone, faded out to nothing. And if anything, if they got to acknowledge that he exists, show him hope.